Because when I look at the, I'm going to cross over to another thing. When I look at the picture in the Nation newspaper a couple of days ago, with the policewoman and the young person and the people standing up around, and all of that angst that was happening in that picture. When I saw that, you know where my feelings went to the child, the young person who does not even know that it is not a cool thing to do to fight physically a police officer.
To fight, period.
Yeah, but we separate ourselves, and so I'm just asking that as we continue the discussion, which hopefully the Governor General is hearing both in she's listening to the radio right now, and also hearing in her official ears, that as we continue to discuss this, that she hears that what we want is both the reduction. Of hurt, and we also want reparations, and we want, when a police officer right now, without that act being right now, go to certain districts that they could kick down the door, and therefore little children who live in there are now turning into the one I see on the front of the, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So I want that kind of,
that's the point,
ethic to pervade the discussion.
Corey,
which I am now going to listen.
If I could say, I'm with Margaret on this.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we need to be talking about dealing with the root causes of crime. If there are communities in Barbados that seem to be exhibiting a vulnerability to criminality, I can bet my bottom dollar it is because there is high level unemployment in that community. There are deep-seated pockets of poverty and in particular intergenerational poverty in that community. There is hopelessness in that community. And I am yet to hear of any governmental intervention program that says, look, we have a program where if we identify a problem community, we are going to go in with counselors, we are going to go in with job work study programs, with apprenticeships for people, with welfare assistance to get families mired in intergenerational poverty out of that condition.
I was super excited at the comment you made when I approached you in relation to this program. And you say, you know what, instead of discussing all these things, I'd rather be discussing community governance and community empowerment, and I look forward to that, and I'm going to hold you to that.
Correct.
It's just unfortunate that these things come and stand in the way of where we can actually see ourselves going. But it's just gone 2 minutes afternoon. This is Bastard Sunday, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful permaclad U-panel and R-panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joints from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices, delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christ Church 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Brass Stack Sunday, police state or citizen security? We are discussing that today. We go until 15 minutes after 1. We take a break at 12:30 for the latest. But in the meantime and in between time, we say good afternoon and welcome to the next caller. You are on the air.
Good afternoon, Corey.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to the panel. Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner.
Good afternoon.
Mrs. Christian, good afternoon to you, ma'am.
Good afternoon, sir.
You know who the person is.
I do.
Yeah. Right. Mr. Commissioner, I would like to say to you that I am 3,000% backing to you for the stance you are taking, not only in this matter, but on several matters that have been happening in this little country, Barbados, and the way how government seeks to execute its powers in setting up certain practices, which I think as we are here discussing today, Sunday, we are not having discussion with the people who put you there to represent them. And I think, for the love of God, right, we really need to really stand up as a people and stop being so passive. We just need to stop being so passive and stand up for good causes, and to not only to voice our opinions, you know, we need to get up there in numbers and show any government that is running this country, when they are doing wrong, that we are people and we need proper representation, we need proper governance in this country. And the way you do things in this country, especially when it deals with certain sensitive issues, that we need to have dialogue with the people, because this way of doing things, just doing things in a knee-jerk reaction, and government is just doing things how they see fit, that's not good for a country. Mm-hmm. It is not good at all.
I'm with you.
All right. Thank you, caller. Next caller, good afternoon. You're on the air. Hey, good afternoon, boss. That Sunday, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Corey. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
Yes, I would like to say morning to you and your panel. Mm-hmm.
Good day, sir.
I have some concerns about this legislation. Mm-hmm. Because, one, I am one who supports Mr. Comasong in it, because I believe that this is something that should be debated with the Barbadians, because it has some serious implications for me as a citizen. Because, one, I would have heard of all the powers that the police would be given under this act, but I haven't heard about the protection of the citizens of the country. Mm-hmm. Who would be able to be placed into a quote-unquote situation of victimization? Because we are all human beings, and we know at some point in time you can find things like these creeping in to things, especially where people are given power. Now, I am one of the people who believe seriously that if we have this kind of law changing, I would like to see the police complaints committee move away, one, from the police investigating themselves. Because when you have a curfew in a particular area, or as it would have stated, if I can remember, police could have a reason to believe that something can happen and search properties and so, and somebody come up with the idea, well, they don't like you or something. These are things that we got to look at and come, no, there's no protection there for the citizens. I think that this year, before it is proclaimed, although it is passed, I think they need to get back to the citizens of this country and let's have a discussion on it.
Correct.
Because it has some serious implications. Because I believe that we should have a situation where now, rather than the police investigating themselves, that people like me and you and should be able to address complaints now against them in these kind of situations. There's a myriad of things that needs to be looked at. And you can sit down and say that two people or three people has the power to do this, do that, and when then the same people that is protected does not have protection under the same legislation that you're passing.
All right, caller, I'm going to interject here. I want to thank you because we're going to try to move on. I got lots and lots of calls backed up. You touched on two things we have here highlighted in terms of the powers being arrested in two persons, and also Ms. Turton's her first thing, which would be the initial oversight and accountability as well. So we're going to say good afternoon and welcome to the next caller. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
All right, now, My thing is, this is not really a community problem, because, I mean, the majority of us that's every day on the air. everything.
No, but no. We want to deal with facts in this program. I don't think that is it. So let's continue beyond that point. Just what are you trying to say?
Well, I don't see how a drive-by shooting. Good, a drive-by shooting, and you come and you go through that area. The body gone by the long time. How is that gonna help us?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I get your point. You're trying to make. How would that address drive-by shootings within the corridor? Is that what you're trying to say?
That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, good. So that's another consideration right there.
Right.
The only way to address that, I suppose, is to consider that the police can establish a cordon, and when they establish the cordon, any witnesses would have to answer their questions. I imagine that is intended as well to ensure that persons cannot say that they're not telling them what.
But it's witnesses. This target the witness.
The witnesses, so that. It would make it easier, presumably, to locate the persons who have committed the offenses.
Now that you're on that, and let me read two messages that I saw, all the ones I got to read so far. It says, so we have sewage running in the streets, but these draconian laws are being forced down our throats. The right to remain silent has now been removed. What is happening in this country? The question now is, how do we reverse this madness? Mm-hmm. That coupled with a question here to Mr. Commission is asking, Mr. Commission, are you saying that I would not even be allowed to call my attorney first? Did someone ask that question when we were discussing that point? So is that part taken away? Can you call your attorney to?
There's no mention in the legislation of any provision for people being able to call their attorney. The legislation simply says, once a cordon is established, you're within that cordon, you are obliged to answer questions put to you by the police pertaining to either the serious incident of crime or the motor vehicle accident. Mm-hmm. So you see, this is really the problem. It's the powers given to the police.
Let me start right here a minute. Because my question is, if that is the case, there's a reason why you have the right to remain silent, and the reason why you are advised to have counsel. And I learned this here through working with guys at the prison. You can lock up yourself with your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Because I learned, and I can give the Barbadian public an example why it's important to have an attorney. Now, I was working with this guy. Somebody happened to put some gun on his property or whatever. He was probably guilty too. Let him go to prison. But the thing is, the lawyer showed him the difference between two sentences, right? Mm-hmm. He said the gun was not his, as opposed to saying he don't know anything about the gun. Right. Now, when you say the gun is not yours, but you know where it is, that is possession. So he was arrested. Mm. I think he got like a minimum of 7 years. It was contested, whatever. So that is where they advise you, because Barbadian public won't understand the difference between those two sentences. You know, one of them can get you bail. One of them gets you arrested. Do you understand? One gets you arrested. Now, what does the Barbados Bar Association plan to do about this? What does the social activist Barbadian Savior David Commission plan to do about this? This is just one part. Remember, you're talking about the cordons and the curfews. That, I am talking about the removal of the right to remain
but
silent.
That one issue concerns me. I think, you know, we have to determine whether this act passes the muster of constitutionality or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not an easy thing to do, because, you know, the Constitution says we have these rights, but it also says that those rights could be cut down if reasonably required in the interests of defense and public order and public safety. So to determine whether a measure infringes the Constitution, you have to go through a very careful judgment as to whether what is being taken away was something that was that was justified in terms of public order and so forth. But where you are actually taking away the right of a citizen to remain silent, I think it would be very, very hard for any government to convince a court that is not a breach of the citizen's fundamental right and freedom. But as I say, as I said, I think the Bar Association, and not speaking for them, Kristen can speak for them. I think the Bar Association has a duty to look at this act very carefully to determine whether it passes the test of constitutionality.
The process that we have traditionally engaged in is we have set up a committee of attorneys, particularly those who have a specialization in this area, to evaluate the constitutionality or lack thereof of the legislation. And having evaluated that, then the first step, of course, is to inform the government by way of letter that it is not constitutional, or there are aspects of it that are not constitutional, and then to take the matter before a high court judge if it is not repealed. But all of that can only be done if our membership, having been guided by the said committee, accept that that is the way to go. And that would ordinarily be done by way of a special general meeting. Mm-hmm. We have not gotten to that stage as yet, but I wish to make it clear that the Bar Association has taken matters to court before. We are prepared to do that where necessary, but we must always evaluate the legal position first and then determine how to proceed with the sanction of our membership.
All right, let's go back to telephone lines. Good afternoon. Welcome. You're on the air. Good afternoon. Welcome to Brass Tack Sunday. You're on the air. Good afternoon, Brass Tack Sunday. You're on the air. Hey, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Brass Tack Sunday. You're on the air.
Good morning, Corey. Hey. You're on the panel, Mr. Kumashanga.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Now, Corey, I listened to the debate in the Senate, and what I'm really disturbed about is the contribution by Verla de Pisas. And what really has me sort of scared about this whole matter is due to the fact that she was debating this motion, so to speak. And even though she gave some reasons why she would support the measures, she also raised the red flag concerning the clause in the legislation whereby the imposition of a curfew. And she went further to say that it would violate the constitutional rights of the person, so to speak, if you do impose that curfew, due to the fact that you will have just the commissioner of police and the learned attorney general who would be ones who can impose such a curfew. So my concern is, if she recognized that imposing a curfew would be trampling on the rights of the citizens, your constitutional rights, why then would she support such a measure? I thought the least she should have done is at least abstain or do not vote at all. So I don't know what the position of the guests that you have there.
All right, we'll try to take their position now. Thanks.
Just I have the Nation newspaper report of the Senate debate, and the Nation quoted Senator De Pisa as follows, and I'm quoting now: "I don't know there is any subtle way to put it. This is how it shakes down. Would you rather that the state curtails your rights and freedoms in pursuit of that greater good, or would you prefer that the criminal elements curtails your rights and freedoms in pursuit of their selfish gains? That is the crux and the nugget of the matter." End of quote. So apparently the senator is acknowledging that the amendments would curtail the rights and freedoms of the citizens of Barbados, but she is saying that it is better for the state to take away these rights than to be faced with a criminal element that, because of its misbehavior, causes you to de facto lose a number of your rights as well. And I do not think that is a sensible way of addressing this matter.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to always look at a situation where we must have a situation of balance where people's rights and freedoms are protected and maintained, even while you are taking proper and effective measures to deal with crime.
This reminds me a lot of the discussion in the United States around counterterrorism and whether they should interrogate or should they still have rights while you, especially if there's a pending terrorist attack, that type of thing. Never thought we'd have this discussion in Barbados.
You know, for example, the searching of a person's home is a good case in point, right? Right now in Barbados, in order for the police to search your home, remember, the home is a man and woman's castle. In order for the police to search your home, they have to at least go to a magistrate or a justice of the peace, say to that judicial officer, there is some good and compelling reason why the police need to be given the power to go into that person's home and search it. So they have to convince that judicial officer, and then that judicial officer will make a reasoned determination. So, and if he or she...
That's like a check or a balance.
Yes, so he gives the search warrant. The police then go and execute that search warrant. What this act is saying, it said, look, once a curfew is established, there's no need to go to any magistrate or any justice of peace or make any case for a search warrant. In fact, you don't even need a search warrant.
Mm-hmm.
Once I, the police officer, have determined that I have reasonable suspicion that any offense, and I keep stressing this because this is what some of the lawyers who are taking the opposite position are failing to recognize. The amendment does not say arrestable offense. It does not say serious offense. Any offense is either has been committed or is about to be committed in that house. I have the
right. As you
were
saying, they
enter.
Income tax.
Exactly.
Let's go back over to the lines because we head into 12:30.
The important thing is that it doesn't have to even be connected to the initial basis for the curfew. And that's troubling.
We got to talk about the abuse of and the use of these powers, though. Good afternoon and welcome.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon to you, Corey, and to your panel, Ms. Turton, as well as Mr. Commerson.
Good afternoon.
I've been listening quite carefully to the program, and one thing I must agree with is that there is a greater need for public discussion, for sure, surrounding the implications of this bill.
Wait, before we go any further, this is Simon Ali, and when we initially had this program, we were trying to get Mr. Verla De Pisa on, Senator Verla De Pisa, but she has an estimate exercise, so she wasn't able to attend, and I would have reached out to Simon Ali, who would have, he is willing to make a contribution on this. So sorry about that, Simon, please go ahead.
Yes, please, thanks. However, I think coming out of the discussion, hearing from both Ms. Turton and, of course, you, Mr. Commerson, what I am getting is that there is this distrust of the judgment of the senior police with regards to inspectors as it relates to the imposition of a curfew. So I am kind of wary of that because it sounds as if you are not trusting the judgment of police who are acting on the getting the intelligence.
The question is not whether we're questioning their judgment. The question is whether the legislation itself, as currently framed, imposes sufficient safeguards to ensure that that judgment is responsibly exercised. Because we may sit and we may say the people who are in power now are responsible and we trust them. But the challenge is that the law is the law. The law will exist regardless of who is there. And because of that, we have to make provision to ensure that if, for example, someone does end up in this position who has this power, that their checks and balances to ensure it is responsibly exercised. Having reviewed the legislation, there really are no checks and balances. At present, the Commission of Police is the sole person to determine whether crime is of such a nature and extent, an extremely broad phrase, of such a nature and extent in a particular area that a curfew is required. Right. He alone determines that. He then requests the permission of the minister. There's no, there's nothing in the act saying how that determination is made by the minister. The minister just has to sign an authorization, and then the commissioner of police appoints an inspector. The inspector himself then conducts the curfew, and having conducted the curfew, is to prepare a report that goes back to the commissioner of police. There is no point at which the any assessment is made by any independent party, by any by parliament, by cabinet, by any superior authority as to the extent to which the commissioner of police has properly exercised the decision itself to impose a curfew. And secondly, whether the police themselves have properly exercised the powers given to them by this legislation. There is no provision in relation to that at all. So there is no initial oversight, because it's left to one person. There is no accountability after that. There, when you look at the sections, they do not seem to take into consideration the citizen and his rights. The only thing that is considered in relation to the citizen is that a police officer must require the owner of the premises to be present for the search.
For the search. To be
That I suppose you would imagine that that is protecting the citizen. But it is not phrased that way. What that does is it means that he has the power to mandate that you stay when your house is being searched. If it was meant to protect the citizen, it would say that it cannot be conducted in the absence of the owner. There is a difference. So that the actual provisions do not make any provision for safeguarding that, for ensuring there's accountability and oversight. And that is the concern. There's no direct attack in relation to who is currently occupying the office or this concept that the police are corrupt. The point is that we are human beings and there is risk, and the legislation has an obligation to provide for that risk.
I agree, but I am not of the opinion that, and I could be wrong, I am not of the opinion that the commissioner of police would just willy-nilly impose curfews. I am not of that opinion. I am of the of the opinion that after the careful examination of intelligence that would have been gathered, because I would assume that is how our Royal Barbados Police Force operates, that after gathering intelligence about the potential for any kind of criminal activity that may occur.
Simon, your comment is very ironic, you know, because just a few days ago, members of the Democratic Labour Party administration were making pronouncements to the effect that a commissioner of police in the very recent past had abused his powers in relation to the wiretapping of phones in Barbados. So I'm saying, any office holder. No, the point I'm not saying whether that is true or not. I really don't know. I'm saying the allegation was made. So the point is, there's no office that is above falling short of standards, misbehavior, malfeasance, etc. That's the only point I'm making.
Agreed.
Simon, don't you move. Callers, don't you move. WhatsAppers, don't you move. Panelists, don't you move either. We are coming back. We're going to the lunchtime latest from the Starcom Network News. More of your calls, questions, and queries when we come back. Remember, this is brought to you all in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. Okay, police state or citizen security? Lots of questions, lots of comments. We have on the line Simon Allen and in studio David Cominshaw and Kristen Turton. We're taking your calls and your WhatsApps in relation to the question of the police amendments, the amendments to the police act done here recently in Barbados. Lots of interesting questions while we were off air, lots of WhatsApps. Let's get to them and let's get back to the telephone lines. This one says, they want to ask the panelists, what about the victims' rights? Are you guys having amnesia regarding what happened last Kadumat Day? I witnessed a photo with all of the tools of violence at Grantley Adams. If I am not a criminal, I have no fear of the law. Aggressive policing reduced crime in New York City to a level that is lower than many Caribbean nations on a per capita basis. That is how the serious issues are resolved. The island is full of bad actors that need to be weeded out at all levels. What say you guys?
Well, first, I would have.
So I mean, you like that segment.
That business about that business about aggressive policing, reducing crime levels in New York City. I would have serious doubts about that. My feeling is that the way to deal with crime, it has to be much broader than simply policing and a law and order approach. I think it you know, you really need social intervention. A very holistic approach.
Agreed. I agree to that.
Social intervention. And so now you see the thing is nobody is opposed to the police going after criminal elements. Nobody's opposed to the police going after those young men who carried out the shootings at on Spring Garden Highway. Indeed, in fact, the police in Barbados already have quite sizable powers where firearms are concerned. I read out earlier that where there's any suspicion that anyone is in unlawful possession of a firearm or ammunition, that under our Firearms Act, the police already have the power to search, to detain persons, to search motor vehicles, vessels, etc. So you see, we have to be careful, all right? What this bill is actually saying is that it is giving the police powers to determine that areas of the country are going to be subjected to cordons or to curfews. And then once that is done, those areas now become the subject of the police exercising very extreme powers.
Let us look at one elephant in the room, though. Simon, it's coming to you now. It's coming to you, Simon. Sorry. I just want to ask this on this quiet side and then finish off and come to you. The whole idea of discussing this on the heels of a senator and minister being robbed just yesterday and assaulted, does that take some of the wind out of the sails of persons who are against this amendment?
No, because nothing that is being proposed would have prevented that from happening. What would have prevented that from happening is what has been called for from before, an address as to what are the root causes of crime? Why are persons so motivated to do that? Why? How do we ensure that isolated areas have sufficient protection around them? That is not affected in any way, shape, or form by a cordon or by a curfew. That happened in the middle of the day.
So that right challenges, wrong remedies.
Exactly. So that you have these challenges.
By a bank. In the middle of the day, by a bank.
Where there are security cameras.
All right, Simon.
I kind of beg to differ. My whole thing is this, right? It is important that the police have at their disposal certain powers. Now, when we look at it, I am still, as a citizen, I have to be able to have some trust or faith in my police force. Because as a citizen, I am saying I'm giving the right to my personal protection and protection of my property. And I'm trusting the police to act on my behalf. To protect me as a citizen. Now, the challenge with this legislation, I can agree, is that we don't want profiling to happen because of it. Where we say, you know what, this particular working class neighborhood, we suspect all the time that there may be some drug possession or weapons possession, and it becomes a situation where profiling occurs. So I agree with Mr. Commissar on that. We don't want profiling to happen. Because as we know, there is the whole socioeconomic attachment to crime. Statistics would indicate that most of the crimes are committed by working class people. We do know that. Yeah, we do know that.
Most of the non-white collar crime.
Exactly. Where we know that white collar crime will be committed from the another section of society. But in its state right now, I do believe that there's more room for discussion and amendments to be made to it. But I think it is a step in the right direction if it is framed correctly. And of course, as Mr. Ritten mentioned, that the rights of the individuals are not infringed on, and there is protection for, of course, people who may have some negative fallout from these curfews. Mm-hmm. I heard when Mr. Commission spoke about businesses, because obviously if I operate a shop, or I'm a man, I will hold a dance every Friday night. Karaoke and chicken and chips and so on. And the curfew get imposed the Friday night, my business get impacted.
Yes.
So I could understand that. So yes, in its state right now, I don't think that it will get the support of all of the public. So it's up to the, as you said, if it goes to the Governor General, I would hope that she would recommend that further debate goes back down to be debated more.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's stay on your line. Let's conference another call in at this time. Good afternoon and welcome, Brass. That Sunday, you're on the air.
Good. Right, sir.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Mr. Commission.
Yes, sir.
You was going good up to one point. Let me do something, see?
Let's go quickly, because we're going to do the rest of calls here quite quickly, because we only got half hour.
Say that when it comes to crime, is the very certain part, you get on, like, there's only certain groups of people that do things in bad business. Let me tell you something, Mr. Commission. Some years ago, they had some people terrorizing Belleville. Terrorizing. I asked Mr. Okay, I can't even call the name now. They know he would tell you about it. And when they catch them, who they were? There wasn't nobody from China Village, the Bayland. There was people from Belleville.
You misunderstood me, you know. I am with you on this. I am saying that the people who are going to implement this are going to be considering certain communities as opposed to others.
We're saying the same thing. Okay, thank you, caller. Let's take another call. 10 minutes to one. Good afternoon, you're on the air. Good afternoon, Brass. That Sunday, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Corey, this is Mohammed Nasser. How you doing, man?
I'm fine, thanks. And you, sir?
Good. I'm pretty good. You found me good, too?
Yes, please.
Good. Let me say good afternoon also to my special friend, David Commissioner.
Thank you, Brother Nasser.
And also to the lady that is there. David, I want to ask you a question, though. Do you know anywhere in the Caribbean where this law that you just explained so clearly to the Barbadian people has passed?
Well, I think they have this kind of law in Jamaica, for example. But as Kristen here was telling me, Kristen has done some research on this, and Kristen is telling me that even though they have this kind of law, that they have built into their law certain protections for the ordinary citizen that we don't have. Maybe Kristen can speak a bit about that.
Yes, that's correct. Jamaica has a very similar type of provision, which is dedicated, obviously, to ensure greater crime detection and prevention. But what it has that our legislation does not is that at the very least, if a curfew is imposed, the officer who is responsible for conducting the curfew has the power to allow individuals in that area to be out of their homes during the curfew hours. So they can give written permission for that to take place. Right now, our legislation is currently framed. Once you're in a curfew area, you have to be indoors within that period of time, and that no provision for consideration of people's personal issues and work lives and so on has been built into it. Additionally, it also provides issues in relation to arrest. Now, our legislation allows for persons to be detained to facilitate search, but there is no provision currently for a third party to evaluate whether such detention is necessary or whether any arrest that takes place during that time is appropriate. In Jamaica, they have to go before a justice of the peace who determines first and foremost whether that is necessary or appropriate. That is not the situation here.
In truth, we have a blind law. A law for any vision. A law for any basic thing. No, I want to ask a question. Has this law stopped any crime from escalating in Jamaica?
That's an excellent question. I am not in a position to say whether it has stopped but I know that crime is at a very high level. Right. And dangerous crimes that we are afraid of are at a very high level in Jamaica. And this law has been in place for an extremely long time. I don't know that there's anything in there. Correct. It was created since 1935.
Go ahead, finish up. Last point, Carl.
No, go on.
We want to ask Simon, especially coming up with this in terms of this, to bring the other side of it, is that many times we've had situations, when we talked about gangs, we were told there were no gangs. When we talked about blocks, we were saying, okay, no block. When we talk about crime, they say it's not as bad as other places. So why is this then necessary from the same powers that be that told us this thing over and over over the last couple of months and years?
I think it's about being proactive too as well, Corey. I mean, you can't assume that Barbados 10 or 15 years from now, just how you wouldn't expect that people that were riding on horses years ago would not be driving cars. What I'm saying to you is that we need to have visionary legislation that will deal with the possible, with the possibility of crime becoming more organized in Barbados and affecting or being within certain communities. And it's important that we have the legislation to assist the police in carrying out their duties. However, I agree with Mr. Turton that, of course, we have to consider the rights of individuals. No one is not saying that. But we can't assume that Barbados 20 years from now will be saying kumbaya. No, we're not saying that Barbados will be at the brink of armed revolution either. But it's also very important.
That's where my concern comes, because what we're doing, we're planning for major violence 20 years from now instead of trying to stave it off by bringing some social programs and so on.
In fact, I want to put that challenge to Simon.
Simon, as a
future leader in this country.
Yes, sir. And I
want to congratulate you for the very constructive position you have taken thus far. But you see, it's a question of where do we go? As we go into that future, where do we go? What are going to be our fundamental policies? You know, the Commissioner of Police made a statement on this, it's reported, he was defending it. But in his defense of it, it's published in the Nation newspaper. This is what he says. He says, "It must be noted that our response to these and other challenges must reflect an understanding of communities that, if not presented with strong law enforcement and other supporting interventions, will serve as the incubator for violence, public disorder, and ultimately an organized challenge to the rule of law." End of quote. Now, you see, even the Commissioner of Police is recognizing that there is a need for other supporting interventions. He's obviously referring to social interventions. And that is what we are not hearing about in Barbados, Corey. My fear is that we go the road of Jamaica, of Trinidad and Tobago, of these other countries that have assumed that the way to deal with rising crime is more police, more police manpower, more police powers, and a resort to kind of paramilitary targeting of troublesome communities. And I think we would be making a fundamental mistake if that is the direction we go in. We have done much better in Barbados thus far.
True.
Going the road of a community building orientation and programs. And let us concede that in recent times you have seen the emergence of troublesome communities. But you have heard no response to that by saying, you know, we, the powers that be, we have set up special intervention programs for these troublesome communities. And that is what we need to hear, Simon. We need to, because that ultimately is the strength of Barbados. And so if there are new challenges now, let us hear about an enhancement and an upgrading of that kind of interventionist approach, rather than let us lock down communities and give police powers. They don't need warrants. They can just, you know, go search people and homes. Because what you're going to do, when you have that kind of invasion of a community, with police carrying out patrols, searching people, going into homes without search warrants, etc., people are going to react. You're going to have responses. You're going to have, and you're going to have people charged with resisting the police, insulting the police, and these new penalties that this act is bringing forward. You know, I mean, where you have increased the penalties. Okay, right now under our law, obstructing, resisting, insulting a police officer, the maximum penalty is a fine of $1,000, imprisonment for 12 months. You have taken that from $1,000 to $10,000 and from 1 year to 3 years. 3 years. So you can see that you may very, very well create a scenario where the relationship between certain communities and the police deteriorates.
Any comment, Simon, before I go back to the phones and the WhatsApp?
Simon? What we're saying is that, mm-hmm. Yes, I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Right, what we're saying is that I am not of the opinion that nothing is being done in Barbados to address these issues through social programs. Now, when we consider the work of even community-based organizations to help young people and those persons who are considered to be vulnerable in our society, there are a number of programs out there, even the Ministry of Social Care, to my knowledge, with their IC Bridge program, where they would have highlighted close to 200 households across Barbados in need of social and welfare assistance, is one of the achievements, I would say, so far with regards to assisting people and helping people who may have some challenges.